It's Wednesday at 8:30, and that means it's time for Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange, your chance to vent your spleen politely on topics in the news. Producer Emily Cureton joins me in the studio for this segment, and we expect to hear a lot from you as we talk about Jordan Cove, the denial of the plans for the LNG plant and pipeline, and openness in government. Those are the topics. Your phone calls come in at 800-838-3760. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. Let's start with Jordan Cove, one of the major stories of the last week. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission released its ruling on Friday, denying certification for the plan to build a liquefied natural gas LNG export terminal near North Bend and for the 232-mile pipeline to supply it. The pipeline drew the most ire, 3 feet in diameter, running from the Klamath Basin to the coast, crossing hundreds of parcels of land and dozens of streams, including the Rogue River. I asked on an earlier Vents Day if people would have supported the export terminal without the pipeline. And one caller said, you can't have the terminal without the pipeline, which is exactly ultimately what FERC said. The pipeline's benefits did not outweigh the adverse effects on landowners, so the pipeline was denied. And without the pipeline, there could be no terminal, so it too was denied. The companies behind the LNG plan say they'll appeal. Opponents rejoice in the meantime. Let's get your take. First, tell us what you're feeling about the FERC denial. Are you happy? Are you sad? 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Then swivel around to look at the future. Do you think the plan will live again in some form? Remember, Jordan Cove began as an import terminal. When we thought we needed to get natural gas from overseas, it turned into an export terminal amidst the fracking boom and a sudden surplus of natural gas on the North American continent. Tell us about your ideas about the LNG denial and where things go from here. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Topic two is Sunshine Week, the week news organizations and good government groups celebrate openness in government, sunshine laws that require transparency and that sort of thing. But it's also a week to lament the lack of transparency in government and point out ways in which the public's knowledge of public agencies could stand a little improvement. Give us a general sense of your feelings. Is there enough transparency in government? Do we know enough about what government is doing at all levels, or are things just too opaque? What would you most like to know about government at any level that you just find difficult to find out? Let's get your thoughts on Sunshine Week, openness in government, and the denial at the LNG operation. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Emily, this week's survey was about the open government stuff. What did we ask?
Well, we asked pretty much what you just threw out there to our listeners. Mostly, in general, are transparency and openness in government enough? Are they just right? Are they too much? And we got mostly lamentations back. You know, 93% of the people who answered our survey said there's just not enough openness in government. And their answers were pretty fleshed out in terms of why and which areas they would like to see improvement. I would say that the federal government came up most of all, although we had answers that echoed every single level of our system and different complaints about which access we can and cannot have to information.
Now, you said a fair number of people in the survey that we put out, which was about the openness in government, were lamenting the fact that things are not quite the way they'd like them to be.
That's right, Jeff. We didn't get a terribly high number of responses, although we are still accepting them. The survey is at jeffexchange.org and on our Facebook page. Easy to find. And you can still weigh in. But of the 14 people that we heard from, and these were pretty deep thinking questions in some ways, very open-ended. We just asked people the level of government where I see the most trouble getting information and cooperation is fill in the blank. And we got this from Karen in Gold Beach. Karen in Gold Beach wrote in, while both state and local governments are grossly affected with disclosure issues, obviously in order to protect their own individual agendas, the federal government and its agencies are by far the worst at not being democratic in their practices and giving their attention majorly to corporations and money and very little attention to individual rights of ownership. That from Karen in Gold Beach.
Interesting. So more about the money part of the process, where it seems like the people who have lots of money get to call the shots in government. And not the first time we've heard that, and not the last time. A couple of phone calls here. Let's go to Marie in Humboldt County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. Marie, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
This is Mary Lou. I'm with the League of Women Voters of Humboldt County. And for Sunshine Week, we're having a community participation fair, and it's scheduled for today on the Freedom of Information Day, as it marks the importance of government transparency and access to information by its citizens. This free event will include music and refreshments, and the aim of it is to bring the citizens of Humboldt County together with public officials and representatives from boards and commissions to facilitate communications and to illuminate volunteer activities. It is tonight at the Warfinger Building in Eureka, California, 1 Marina Way, from 5 to 7 p.m.
And did you say today is Freedom of Information Day?
It is, yes.
Well, every day is Freedom of Information Day on the Jefferson Exchange, yes. If we could have anything to do with it. Well, thank you, Mary Lou. Thanks for letting us know about that event. Actually, we'll hear from the League of Women Voters a little bit later this week on the show about community participation more generally and at the local level, how these kinds of organizations get people involved with their government. You know, we just heard from Karen and Gold Beach on our survey. Karen went on and offered some more comments really about not elected officials, which I think we tend to think of as the most accountable to us in government. What she took issue was with bureaucracy, with the appointed officials who often have, you know, a much more secure job, especially on the local level. You know, for instance, the district attorney is perhaps a very obvious figurehead, but perhaps the deputy DAs who have more job security tend to actually sculpt the tenor of prosecutions or that kind of discrimination in the office. Karen wrote of that, why are government agencies and their appointed officials not voted in? Why are they allowed to make their own rules, decide who breaks those rules, and then determine the severity of penalties for each incident that they determine, and whether or not an incident even warrants a penalty with no accountability measures in place for the area of concern each agency is assigned to? So that kind of marries Sunshine Week to Sunset Week. I don't know if that's a whole week, but the idea that agencies and bureaucracy need to be evaluated and held accountable ever so often.
It is interesting that there seem to be pulses and beats in openness in government, that there are periods when people think, you know, it's time to really just clear things out and just throw open the doors and let a lot of information go out there. And then, as has been documented many times in many places, there begins this process of chipping away where exemptions are then carved out. The Oregon legislature has been famous over the last 20 years for finding new things to restrict, new things to take out of the public view over the course of any legislative session. In fact, one case in particular, I remember years ago, one of the ways in which a reporter I worked with was able to track what was going on private timberland in Oregon was looking at the timber severance taxes paid by what was then the Medford Corporation. Mm-hmm. And what those tax payments were indicating was that the amount of timber being cut on Medco's private lands had zoomed over the course of a couple of years to help pay off a leveraged buyout that took over the company. And by the time that had all fleshed itself out, the Medford Corporation ended up transforming and leaving Medford and taking a lot of jobs out with it, was that the Oregon legislature then closed off access to the timber severance tax records.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I'm sure we could go through the annals of history there for examples of when has restricted access to public information, to your tax dollars at work, been motivated by people protecting entrenched interests or by a genuine concern for what's public and what's not and the workings of government needing to a certain extent to be a bit opaque or a bit secret in order for them to function correctly. As a journalist, you come up against this all the time. People think that journalists have like superpower access to information, and we don't. It's the same thing that the public has for the most part, which is the ability to file a Freedom of Information Act request or just be nice to people and get them to tell you stuff.
You can pretty much guarantee that after we've asked all of our questions to any person in a position of authority, the first question back is, who is this again?
Right.
And why do you want this information?
Right. Or why do you want this information? And we did have a couple of survey respondents who talked about state government and state offices. They weren't particularly elaborate, but a bit of disillusionment evident in, say, from Jean in Brookings, wrote, what motivates the officials to make such poor decisions? And she said the level of government where she sees the most trouble getting information and cooperation is, in fact, the state legislature. Jennifer in Klamath Falls echoed those concerns. She says, where does every penny get spent? State offices also bring her the most frustration. I mean, do we want to know where every single penny is spent, or is that the trust that we put in officials once we elect them?
Well, even if we don't want to know, I think maybe the larger point is that we want the information to be available to us. If we decide, yes, we want to know where every penny is spent, we would like to know that we can access the state budget, and we can with that. It's a little harder with the federal budget, for example. We're talking about openness in government. This is Sunshine Week across the country. We're also talking, though, on this Vents Day about the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission denial of the gas pipeline and the export terminal planned for North Bend. The pipeline would have run to North Bend from the Klamath Basin. A lot of people doing handstands over this last week when we put up the news about the denial. And in fact, I've never seen so many people look at one item on our website so fast. I think by the middle of Saturday, we had 1,500 people had already looked at this thing, which, you know, outstrips just about anything else on the website ever, maybe. So, well, let's get your thoughts about the denial of the LNG operation so far and what you think might happen next. 800-838-3760 to take part in this or any Vents Day. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Louise in Ashland writes, "What I do not understand is the demonstrated lack of knowledge on the part of FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. These members are recent appointees but appear not to be up to date on the science of greenhouse gases. FERC states that they oversee environmental matters related to natural gas. However, they never mention the fugitive emissions that endanger not just the natural environment but human health also." So we're talking about escaping methane. Methane, actually a more impactful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. But Louise's email continues, "I consider FERC to be behind in their knowledge about greenhouse gases, and this destroys any trust the public can have in their decisions. The commissioners were appointed by the Obama administration. I'm assuming this is before the administration acknowledged the impact of greenhouse gases on our environment. Totally disappointing," writes Louise. "In the years ahead, there are going to be other critical decisions such as this. It does not seem that FERC is up to the job of protecting our environment." Well, that's one set of thoughts about the LNG.
Right. I mean, a different tone, I think, than the jubilation that I've heard from so many opponents of the pipeline and of the terminal. You know, social media was blowing up in the wake of this news. That's an interesting term that Louise used there, fugitive emissions. I don't think I've heard that. You know what that means, Jeffrey?
It just means stuff that escapes, fugitive, because it's not something you intended to get out there. You know, leaks in pipes or cracks in the structure, whatever it happens that might let methane out in ways that were not intended. So it's not flaring off and burning, which is a different process, but actually just stuff getting away from you.
And do we know if this decision by FERC is unprecedented in its scope or in its shutting down this project? Or I think for me, I was a bit surprised that the decision was so resounding and so negative. I'm curious what our listeners feel, if you share in the jubilation, if you think it wasn't enough, and if you think there is still a possibility of this project moving forward. Do you want it to move forward? Did you see this as a boon for Oregon's economy, which in many ways has been fledgling and largely resource extraction based over many decades?
Well, you know, I can't honestly speak to whether this is unprecedented. I mean, FERC does make rulings on a lot of different things involving energy processes, but it was interesting to read about to know that the decision from FERC echoed what the caller had said on Vents Day several months ago. When I, you know, sometimes when you're sitting here in live radio, you'll say some things that you wish you could take back, and that was like, well, what would you think about the plant without the pipeline? And she called in and said, you can't have the plant without the pipeline. And that's where FERC got. It said the pipeline's no good because we can't counter the adverse effects on landowners, and therefore the plant has no point.
And I'm just thinking about all the actions that I heard about people taking to prevent this pipeline from being built. Landowners, people walking the length of the pipeline to protest it. They were certainly active in communicating with this producer about their concerns and making sure that people heard from them as landowners who were organizing that they didn't want this pipeline going through their land. Usually, you know, eminent domain is not such a strange coincidence in this part of the world. So I think that's where my surprise came from, is the fact that landowner concerns were cited right off the top there. I didn't think that they would have such a weighty impact on FERC's decision, and I'm curious what our listeners think of that.
The numbers I saw indicated that 90% of the landowners had shown resistance to the LNG pipeline locating. Let's get your thoughts. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange. You can vent on the LNG pipeline and plant refusal by FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Our other topic this week is openness and government. This is Sunshine Week. Does the sun shine enough on government as you know it? If not, where are the areas you would like to see improvement? Which level of government would you really like to see put some more stuff out there? 800-838-3760 is our phone number here on the Exchange. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Interesting, the call we got before from the League of Women Voters reminded me about not that operation, which does attempt in some places in the country to put information out about candidates, but Project Vote Smart. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it, but was fairly successful probably 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. putting out questionnaires to political candidates and saying, you know, where do you stand on this issue, this issue, this issue? In recent years, Project Vote Smart has been stymied by the fact that a lot of candidates don't want to answer that information. They don't want to go on record anywhere. Now, this is really interesting in an information age. That somebody requests information, but no, this is not information that I, the candidate, control. It's information somebody else requests and I give to them. So, you know, they may be out there tweeting their positions and their feelings about stuff left and right. But when mm-hmm. it comes to somebody putting a questionnaire in front of them saying, where do you come down on these particular issues? Sorry, no.
Right. I mean, we deal with that a lot on this program. People who want to control the discourse. They're very interested in communicating with the public, but they always want the questions in advance. We don't do that here on the Exchange. We'll just say that out there. And, you know, earlier this week, we had an interview with a communications director for a state senator's office. And that very question came up where people, they want to know the senator's stance. And she was pretty frank in saying that oftentimes that stance changes as the legislative session draws near or develops and different political things happen. One of our survey comments when we asked people about government and transparency actually came from the Jefferson Exchange's own Megan Mercier, who's right across the other side of the glass there. And she agreed with the many people who said there's not enough transparency and openness in government. I'm going to read Megan's comment for her right now. It speaks to this point, Jeff. She said, how does input from constituents really affect their decision-making process? Do emails really get the message across? What happens to an opinion that may not totally align with a representative's party line or other values? So that from Megan here in Ashland, our own associate producer on the Exchange.
So we want to know what you think. This is Vents Day, your chance to vent on openness in government and or the gas pipeline and plant, which have now been deep-sixed by FERC. But do you think they'll stay dead? Do you think? I mean, we certainly have heard talk from Veresen, the company that wanted to build the Jordan Cove gas export terminal, that it does plan to appeal this decision by FERC. And so we should be hearing sometime in the next 30 days about progress on that. What do you think about where things go from here? What do you think is likely to happen? What are your feelings in general about what has happened so far? Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. We do have some comments that came in through our Facebook page in the opening hours after after the FERC decision was announced. Southern Oregon Climate Action Now went on the Facebook page and said SOCAN is relieved that FERC did the right thing in denying the permit for the Pacific Connector Pipeline and Jordan Cove Export Terminal, but disappointed that they ignored the impact it would have on climate change, which is an interesting point because the decision was made on the basis of like, well, you've got nobody set up to buy the gas that you're talking about exporting. So therefore, we can't really demonstrate a need for that either. So it was done on economic, not environmental or climate change issues, which is what SOCAN is pointing out here.
And Chuck in Langlois, he answered our survey. He echoed, you know, not about that particular issue, but he said the one thing he would most like to know from a government at any level is a process for addressing climate change. And he singled out the federal government as being particularly disappointing on this front, perhaps because they, you know, hold a lot of the chips. So even a decision like this, where it could have been couched in language of climate change acceptance and accountability, it wasn't. And perhaps that tempers some of the joy that opponents of the project feel. We haven't heard from people who are disappointed that this is not moving forward. And I know they're out there. I've heard from them and they've got their reasons. You know, they are perhaps not voiced as often on this show, but perhaps we've got a few minutes left here today and would love to hear from them. Chuck said that this process for addressing climate change is the one thing that any government needs to be putting at the forefront of their priorities.
You know, there's a way in which these issues tie together further, too, which is I was just reading Leonard Pitt's column from the Miami Herald this morning. It's carried in the Mail Tribune in Medford. And he was writing about climate change and government information at the same time because Florida's governor, Rick Scott, was the governor who mandated nobody should use the terms climate change or global warming. And although he denied up and down that he'd ever said that, the heads, or at least people who were high up in several agencies, including the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, said, oh, yeah, I actually was told, do not use these terms. So we're in a world where information is critical. Information is abundant, but it is also, in a lot of cases, sculpted and managed, which is one of the other issues that come up on this and any other Sunshine Week is the information you're getting the unvarnished truth? For example, and we get to the other realms like
the unvarnished truth, that shiny, distant thing. Where do we find that, Jeff?
That's right. I like my truth rough, you know, rough and raw. But you know, it's like the obtaining of the Hillary Clinton emails. That's always been a big deal, too. I mean, and that'll continue to be a big deal, I think, throughout this campaign, despite Bernie Sanders saying, I don't care about your damn emails. I don't want to hear about these in debates. But
well, trustworthiness in elected officials is a very legitimate point of inquiry before they become actually elected officials. And we see that perhaps amplified in something like a presidential race. We see it on the local level, too. I'm thinking of a number of commissioner races that are pretty hot around our region on account of the incumbents, issues of trust being raised about them. And in some ways, those arguments become less about the import of, say, what's in those emails, or were they really a detriment to our national security, and more about the character of the person that we're, you know, considering to represent us.
You know, the email trail in particular has proved to be an interesting one, not just because of Hillary Clinton and the private email server and what she put out that was or was not classified at the time she might have put it across email, but the fact is that this is how people communicate with each other within government now, and this
email.
Is email. And mm-hmm. This is often the first place that reporters are going to go to find information, because you look now at also the constant quest to get emails out of the now closed Kitzhaber administration. John Kitzhaber resigning as governor of Oregon in the middle of February, basically a month into his fourth term, because of allegations of influence peddling on behalf of the First Lady, Sylvia Hayes. And this every so often there's a dump where they'll put out a few thousand pages of emails more, and the Oregonian goes through with a fine-tooth comb because they have the staff that can go through this stuff and finds more stuff that indicates moods and attitudes. And the most recent cascade of that we got was a pretty down-in-the-mouth John Kitzhaber late in his last term, before he even got reelected for a fourth term. About the nature of government and just how difficult it was to get things done politically. But we know these things because there are open records laws, there are sunshine laws, and we have access to emails.
And for now, we trust that our government follows that laws. I know, as someone who's actually filed a fair number of open records, public records requests in my career, you get a letter back within 10 days that tells you whether or not your request will be accommodated and the reasons for that. So there's a level of trust there, too, when you talk about emails. I know on the local level, the business of government being conducted electronically often raises some interesting questions about what a quorum is and what a public meeting is and what kinds of discussions people should and shouldn't have access to. So, it's a brave new world out there, talking about all the different ways there are to connect and obscure information.
I noticed, too, that what often happens in the filing of Freedom of Information Act requests is you'll get the acknowledgement that, yes, you can have these documents. They will cost you 10 cents a page, 25 cents a page.
Oh, yeah.
65 cents a page, something like that. You've been through that, too.
Well, you can always request access. That's the thing. If you want to go through, and that's a good way to get to know your county clerk or whatever office that you may need to camp out in as you go through those pages of information that you don't want to pay to have copied. You do not ever have to pay for access.
Interesting. I wanted to get to another message we got actually a couple of days ago from Glenn Archambault, who was responding to the LNG pipeline story. I remember talking to him years ago about the 1-foot pipeline that came into the Rogue Valley from the Klamath Basin just to provide gas from another direction. He says, during this long pipeline debate, few mentioned that Jackson County is a special natural gas county that includes the university in Ashland, gas-powered RVTD buses, county compressed gas fuel station, and the interstate gas pipeline on the edge of Ashland approved by FERC in 1995. That's the other one. He just points out that the land was taken, the pipeline built, and the whole project went bankrupt. This is a Canadian company took over the pipelines in Oregon and currently operates the major gas pipelines in Oregon. That was a big sticking point for a lot of people. Foreign company trying to do business within the state of Oregon, and that stuck in a lot of people's craw. We have not talked for the last time about the LNG, I'm fairly confident, or about openness in government. Emily, thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.